Hello and welcome to another episode of The Guards Podcast. I'm Nathan Rivard, hosting today's episode. Joining us in the studio is Major Chad Guion, who is the State Support Chaplain for the North Dakota National Guard. How's it going today, sir?
Very good. Great to be with you.
No, absolutely. Thank you for coming out and doing this episode with us. So, as a chaplain, you know, you don't just get there. It's definitely a road to get there. So, initially, though, what made you want to become a Catholic chaplain in the Army?
Yeah, that's a great question. The it starts with my family. I grew up in a small town in southwestern North Dakota, Regent, North Dakota. Graduated with 8 kids in my class, so very small school. The parish that we went to, so my faith was a priority for my parents, so it was a priority for us kids. And at a certain point, I understood that I needed to take, like, either I was going to live it myself, or it was going to just be my parents' thing, and then when I left home, it wasn't going to be anything that had anything to do with me anymore. And so as I started college, I made some choices to make sure that faith remained a part of my life. And then as time passed, I came to the understanding that I needed to take a look at seminary as a Catholic priest. And so that process unfolded and eventually was ordained a Catholic priest in 2002. And it wasn't until 2013, that I finally was able to get into the National Guard as a chaplain. I had been thinking about it for years and years before that. Now, before I was ordained a priest, I hadn't thought about it at all. If you had told me any time in my life before 2005, I would say, that the military was going to be a thing I was going to be doing, I'd have said, you're nuts. There's no way that's going to happen. And so the recognition that there was a need for Catholic chaplains around 2005, we had soldiers in Afghanistan, Iraq, all over the place. These were men and women in combat. Their lives were on the line, and I felt like they needed to have a Catholic priest saying Mass, hearing confessions, providing the sacraments to them for those Catholic soldiers. There should be a priest there for them. And so I went to the bishop and asked if it would be possible. He said, at the time we had 2 full-time priests already, active duty, and he said, I just can't afford another priest to do that. So it was almost a decade later that the next bishop said, yes, this is a thing you could do. And I thought, well, I can still do push-ups, so I guess let's do this thing. And it was a very quick process then to enter the chaplain corps. Some guys, it takes years to work the process. For me, it was 3 months, and I was accessioned in. But it really had to do with recognizing that there was a need and that I had the capacity to meet the need, and so I should do this.
So You talked about recognizing that need, but what was that like moment or inspiration? Was it you finished Mass on a Sunday, or, you know, doing something during the week and you're talking to someone and they're just, hey, we'd love to have you come out and talk to these folks that are serving? Or like, what was that spark that caused that desire?
When I was in seminary, I was at there used to be what's known as a minor seminary, a smaller seminary in Fargo, at Cardinal Minch. It was in North Fargo. And there was a priest there by the name of Brian Donahue, Monsignor Brian Donahue. He was the rector of the seminary, and he was also in the North Dakota National Guard as an Army chaplain. And so this was in the late 90s, and there was one of the floods that happened in Fargo happened during the time that I was in seminary. And so I was watching the National Guard do its thing in terms of flood protection, protecting property, protecting people, assisting in the dikes, all this sort of stuff. And Chaplain Donahue functioning as a chaplain in uniform running around the seminary because he was doing both jobs. And I thought, that's interesting. I think I could do that. Do I want to do that? I'm not sure, but I think I could do that. And so when the need became clear years later, I had already seen an example of what right looks like, such that taking a risk didn't feel like that much of a risk.
Yeah, so definitely like having someone give guidance of like, hey, yep, this is possible.
That's right.
Something I can do. And you said already your journey was extremely quick once you made the decision. So what does that journey look like for an Army chaplain when they assess into the chaplain corps?
Yeah, the key is having the education in place. So ideally, if you're going to accession in, you need to already have that education taken care of, and then commission, and then enter the chaplain corps. We have a young man right now who's he was a E5 and just was commissioned as a first lieutenant, and he's a chaplain candidate. So he's in the pipeline to become a chaplain, but he doesn't have the education. So he commissions as an officer, he functions as a chaplain candidate in a unit. He's in a mentorship. He's receiving mentorship from other chaplains, and eventually, when he gets his education taken care of and checks all those boxes, then he'll accession as a chaplain. For me, I had already been a priest for 10 years, so the experience thing wasn't a question. I had the education. It was just a matter of the military reviewing all of that, the recruiters reviewing all that, making sure all the boxes were checked, and then having me come in.
And then what is that education requirement? Is it essentially like a master's or a graduate level degree, but in seminary or religious studies?
It's a master's in divinity. So it's a 2-year degree, minimally beyond an undergrad degree. For Catholic priests, it's more than that because our training involves more than just the education piece. And so it ends up being 4 years, 8 years total, if one goes straight through.
And then we talk about it, so heavily involved in the religious side as well, before you started in the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
But how has your personal faith evolved over the years since you've been in the military, because you've been doing it for a while now? And how does that influence the work you do as a chaplain?
Yeah, that's also a great question. I think there's two ways of approaching it. One would be regarding a deep respect, an ever-growing respect for the reality of free will. So this would be a theological perspective. The belief that God has given us the ability to make choices. And that if God has given us that freedom, then the choices that people make using that God-given gift need to be respected, even if I don't agree with them. And so to come into the military as a Catholic chaplain, for me, means recognizing that all of these people, with whom I share many values, but not all, have their own lives and their own way of approaching things. And if I'm going to be of greatest service to them, I need to meet them where they are, not where I think they ought to be, or anything like that. And even just saying that, like where I think they ought to be, even that notion doesn't hold much sway in my mind anymore, if it ever really did. God is where we are, and my job is to help a soldier where they are continue to move forward, and trusting that God's the one who's making things happen, and I'm a facilitator of that, and my job is to provide support to this soldier where they are right now in their life.
So with that, I think we can move right into the chaplain role. For people that aren't exactly familiar with what it is, I think most people are, but what is the primary role of a chaplain, and what do you do specifically for the North Dakota National Guard? And is there any difference between a chaplain in the North Dakota National Guard versus in another branch like the Air Force or the Marine Corps or the Navy, or is it pretty similar?
It would be very similar. The primary responsibility of a chaplain is to provide religious support to soldiers. One of our key freedoms as Americans is religious liberty. And so as the chaplain, the role of the chaplain in the military has evolved over the years from being, you know, a religious advocate for a specific denomination, it's grown into being something more like an advocate for the rights of soldiers to express their religious beliefs according to their perspective, their purview. And so every soldier in every unit has the right to express their religious beliefs as their conscience dictates. And so I'm a Catholic priest. If somebody comes to me who's not Catholic and says, I would like to do X, Y, or Z as an expression of my religious belief, it's my responsibility to help facilitate making that happen, even if it's not a religion that I have any interest in whatsoever, because it's not about me. It's about them and their religious needs. It might require me as a chaplain, that might require the chaplain facilitating a conversation with leadership so that they understand what this soldier is asking for and what their needs are. And depending upon what the response is, leadership is required to do and afford this soldier in their request for their religious expression. Being a chaplain is a great opportunity to get to know soldiers, what their needs are, and then to help meet those needs.
And then you talked about the religious support being one of the main things mm-hmm. that you focus on, if not the main thing. So in what ways do you provide religious support or spiritual support to, you know, soldiers, airmen, and their family? And is there any, like, specific programs or initiatives you'd like to talk about with that?
Sure. So depending upon what their religious denomination is, I can either provide the spiritual support that they're requesting. So like if somebody said, I need to go to confession, I would say, I can help with that. That's a thing I can do. If they said, I need help with Friday Muslim prayers, I would say, I'm probably not your guy, but I will find the guy so that you can have your Islamic religious needs met according to what your needs are. Recognizing those differences and either performing the service or providing the person who will meet the need, the specific need. In the chaplain corps, we have, so that's just what chaplains do, perform or provide. That's core responsibility for any chaplain in any branch. One of the things that we do in the Army Chaplain Corps, and it looks similar in other branches, though it's described differently, is building strong and resilient teams. It used to be known as strong bonds. Now it's building strong and resilient teams. And it can be anything from relationship resiliency training. It can have a religious quality to it. It can be about personal development. It can be about growth and maturity, emotional intelligence, moral leadership training. The building strong and resilient teams training is a great opportunity for soldiers to receive personal development training, to grow as a person, and it's the chaplain corps' responsibility to provide that on a regular basis.
And then, as you talk about the, you know, transferring of programs, how do you foster a sense of community and camaraderie with service members to have them come and join you and, you know, receive that training, receive that? How do you just really get people to engage?
Yeah, that's where being present and engaging in the same training that everyone else is engaged in is absolutely necessary. Rank doesn't matter much in the chaplain corps. What matters is moral authority, moral credibility. So, you know, I remember starting out, actually it was specifically with the 164. I was the chaplain with the 164. And, you know, AT, I'm out crawling in the dirt with E3s and E4s. And they're like, sir, what are you doing? Well, you're here, so why wouldn't I be here, right? What was I doing? Nothing particularly impressive. I wasn't doing anything special. I was just doing the same training that everyone else was doing. But in doing that, the especially those soldiers who newly enlisted, just starting their military career, felt like the chaplain cared about what they were doing and what was going on in their lives, what their responsibilities in the military looked like. And so there was a respect that developed through that, through my willingness to not do anything crazy, just do my job and be with soldiers in the training that they need to go through. So when that credibility gets built up, then there's an openness when the chaplain says, I'm doing a thing. There's an openness on the part of soldiers to say, all right, well, let's see what this thing is. Otherwise, they don't know who I am, and there's no reason to be particularly interested in what I've got going on.
And when you talk about that credibility or getting the buy-in, especially when you talk about junior soldiers, you do more than just religious support, right? You can deal with sensitive topics like mental health, trauma, and have people reach out to you. So maybe you have that young soldier, and they're like, well, I'm not really religious, so I don't want to talk to the chaplain, but I had this event happen, and I need someone to talk to. So how do you get those people?
Yeah, I think it starts with being able to – those occasions when I get a chance, when a chaplain gets a chance to stand up in front of a unit, maybe do some spiritual resiliency training or, you know, moral injury or something along those lines, if a chaplain can demonstrate that he or she has the ability to address the challenges that soldiers face using both religious and non-religious language, it opens the door to the possibility of not non-religious soldiers saying, this chaplain has something to offer me, even if I'm not religious. And so there has to be a demonstration on the chaplain's part that the soldier being religious isn't a precondition for the chaplain being able to provide support to them. And a soldier can only come to know that through, you know, those kinds of opportunities. And a chaplain has to take advantage of those opportunities when they're presented.
And then something else is the confidentiality of a chaplain.
Right. Yeah. So this is, I think this is actually the most important thing that we can offer a unit. And I think for commanders, for command teams, to take advantage of this specific thing. So there's chaplains and generally, under most circumstances, religious affairs specialists have absolute total confidentiality. When a soldier requests confidential communication, it is airtight, legally speaking, where we are not mandatory reporters in that specific context. And so when a soldier is in a bad way, they're struggling, especially if they're concerned about maybe something that they've done or have participated in that's causing them some kind of interior strife. Talking to the chaplain with the knowledge that it's going nowhere and no one can compel the chaplain to divulge the content of that conversation provides a space for a soldier potentially to take all of that intensity that they're experiencing as a result of whatever is going on and to get it out, to diffuse some of that stress, anxiety, whatever it is that they're carrying in their heart, and to begin to start relating to whatever it is they're struggling with in a different way, because that's just how it works when we talk about what we're going through. We don't relate to our own story in the same way when we get it outside of us and are able to see it kind of through the eyes of someone else as we're talking it through. So that by itself can may be all that's necessary, and especially if a soldier is struggling perhaps with suicidal ideation or something along those lines, where they really feel like they're on some kind of cliff, a chaplain can help them walk that back. And the soldier knows it's not going anywhere. This is just between me and this chaplain. That's a huge gift to a command team. It might not seem like it at first, because the idea of a commander not knowing what's going on with every soldier could be a challenging thing too. But in this specific way, it truly is a gift to a unit. There was another piece to that, but I can't remember what I was going to say.
No, I think you really hit the nail on the head. Is just, you know, basically talk about the counseling you offered with that. So, but to go a little bit further, is we talked about counseling, religious support. What are some common myths about, you know, chaplains or the chaplain corps that you could really like just put to bed or set the record straight? Or is there really any, or do people kind of just get it?
Yeah, I think that the myths, like an example of a myth kind of is that you have to be religious to talk to a chaplain, or that a chaplain is going to bring religion into every conversation. You know, that if you want to pray, go to the chaplain. If you don't want to pray, then don't go to the chaplain. I think that chaplains and the way that we are trained in this time, largely, that's just not true. That a person has to be religious, or that they should be concerned about being proselytized or something like that. Does that mean that every chaplain is going to operate always in the best way, always meeting every soldier right where they are? No, because chaplains are a bunch of human beings too, and sometimes we need to be corrected as well. But on the whole, a person does not need to be concerned about being non-religious when they go to visit the chaplain. If that becomes a part of the conversation, a soldier should feel very free to say, "I'm not particularly religious. I just wanted your thoughts. I just wanted to talk about this." And the chaplain should know very well to then move away from that and let it rest. The soldier does not need to have religion in any way imposed upon them. So another thing that I think is worth noting is that chaplains, because they are regular human beings, will always benefit from direction from the command team. You know, I think of leaders who have expressed concern at times in the past about things that they were seeing perhaps with their chaplain in their unit. And they asked me what to do. And I said, "Well, what would you do with any other officer in your unit?" "Well, I would do this." "Well, then go ahead and do that. That's okay. We are officers in the United States Army, and we need to always conduct ourselves accordingly. There's going to be certain ways in which we operate that are going to be different because it's the nature of the chaplaincy. But at the same time, a chaplain should always expect that that we're going to get feedback from our leadership, correction when necessary, and that we need to be able to receive that with gratitude. I've often found that leadership in the Guard will think about chaplains in the way they might think about their pastor in their home church. And there's certainly some similarities there, but then there are also things that are vastly different, and recognizing that matters.
Yeah, I think when you talked about you're still an officer in the mm-hmm. military, go back to deployment, being on a staff, and the third person to talk in essentially all of our commander update briefs and our staff huddles that we would do would be the commander, the command sergeant major, and then the chaplain.
Right.
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
And the problem was the chaplain was so well spoken that the operations officer had to follow them. And everyone was like, all right, well, back to you, sir. And it's like, he's like, I can't, like, come on. Like, and it was every meeting like clockwork because he'd pull some fact for the day. Like, oh, hey, today's Valentine's Day. Like, we're sure you're calling your family back home, but let's talk about St. Valentine and why we do the things we do on the day and what it was and, you know, being a prisoner. Like, and correlating all that to, like, being deployed.
Yeah.
And, like, this is how it is. And that's how, you know, St. Valentine combated his situation and, you know, his daily struggle. And then here's what we can do while we're here. And we're, like, a position you would never think would be, like, adding that sort of, like, value in our staff meeting. And then you're just like, oh, you are setting the tone right after the commander and command sergeant major speak for what we're working on today.
Right.
And it was just phenomenal to have that there.
See, and that's the kind of intangible that a chaplain can bring to bear. When he or she is engaged in paying attention and looking for those opportunities, a good chaplain is phenomenal. Or when a chaplain is good, they're great. And when they're bad, they're the worst. Because they have the capacity to either make everything a little bit better or everything a little bit worse. I won't go into it, but I think of Chaplain Emil Capon. He was a Korean War chaplain who was killed in a POW camp in North Korea. And the impact, again, without going into details, the impact that he had on that POW camp and how that POW camp became something radically different than all the other POW camps, such that when POWs would come in from other camps, they'd be like, what is going on here? Like, you guys are sharing your scrounged up food. Everywhere else I've been, everybody is hoarding. And they would say, it's Capon. It's the chaplain. And at that point, he'd already been dead for over a year. Like I said, when a chaplain is good, they're great. And when they're bad, they're the worst. they can be extremely, they can build things up or be very demoralizing. And so we have to recognize that and carry that responsibility with great respect and appreciation.
So we talk about that historical and very big event, the chaplain there, but do you have any memorable experience or story from your own service as a chaplain that really sticks out to you of where it was that value added?
Yeah. I think specifically of circumstances where something traumatic is happening. Not too long ago, Sergeant Joseph Fazer was killed in a motorcycle accident. And being able to be there for his family, to work with soldiers, and having had the opportunity in that particular instance to have been down at Fort Bliss during the demob process and get to know those guys before tragedy struck, being able to be present was a great gift. The events were horrific, but that opportunity to be of service to soldiers and family, to my mind, that's what the chaplaincy is for. That's the job that we can do that no one else can do. There certainly have been times on drill weekends where I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, what are we doing here? That's okay. I don't need to have a deep sense of immediate relevance every moment of every day, because I know that there will be those times when I'll be asked to do a thing that no one else can do. And being present, being available for those moments that no one can predict, that's what I'm here for. That's what I look forward to.
And you talk about that on drill weekends, but when I see your masses, they're, the place is filled. It's not like Sunday morning rolls around and you're doing the services and nobody's there. I think the majority of people there are there for a drill weekend. And then how do you integrate your faith into your daily work, right? Like you talk about sometimes you're just waiting.
Right.
But how do you just keep that going?
Right. One of the great things about being a Catholic priest is that there's built-in structure to it. And so as a priest, I took a vow to pray the Liturgy of the Hours, which is five times of prayer daily. It would be analogous to how it works in Judaism and also the Muslim religion. Like, the day is divided up and there are specific periods of prayer that I'm required to engage in. And that's great, because sometimes when I'm praying during those obligated five times, sometimes it feels like I'm really connected to God. It's spiritually fulfilling. Other times I am absolutely just checking the box and getting the job done, fulfilling the vows that I made. But either way, I'm staying connected to something that's really core to who I am as a human being. And so for me, the Liturgy of the Hours is a big part of that. I say daily Mass most of the time. Most every day I say Mass as well. And so being able to pray, take a little time during the day, whether I'm in my office or on the road or whatever, taking some time for prayer and integrating what's going on in that day into that prayer, that time of prayer, helps keep all the pieces connected in my life. It helps ensure that there's integration between what my religious duties are, what my relationship with God looks like, and what my daily responsibilities look like as an employee of the North Dakota National Guard.
And then, so we're talking about what you're doing currently, but looking ahead and towards the future, what would you hope to be able to accomplish as a chaplain in the North Dakota National Guard?
My greatest hope would be to continue to train and form chaplains to meet the actual needs of soldiers in the North Dakota National Guard. So that would be my number one thing, is to continually be developing more sophisticated, more on-point training for our chaplains. The second thing, and in a certain sense, it's bigger and it's way beyond just anything that I could ever do on my own, or even the chaplain corps could do on its own, is to think and work toward, to think about and work towards minimizing the experience of loneliness that soldiers have. Especially, I think, in the Guard, where, you know, we only see our soldiers a couple of days a month for the most part. And we live in a particular moment where autonomy, where people are separated from one another, loneliness is rising as it's a serious social problem. People feel lonely. They feel like they don't have people that they can rely on. And if there was something that we could do in the garden, I recognize that this is probably beyond our purview, but to look for those opportunities to minimize, to help soldiers know, I'm not alone. There are people who care about me. My life has value, and the world is better because I'm in it. If there's something that we can do to meet that need, I want to do that.
What advice would you give someone that's looking to come into that role to like meet that idea you have of preventing loneliness for people? Like, what are you looking for in like an Army chaplain that you'd want to have on your roster to really promote and help the ideas you're trying to help?
I would want, so in terms of capacities, I would want somebody who's deeply empathetic, who has the ability to recognize someone who's hurting in them and seeing that there is a deep sense of compassion that's called forth from them in regard to being present to this individual. For someone who has the ability to function in a military environment that is in the structured nature of a military environment, but has a deep heart for people who are suffering, military chaplaincy will be an endless source of fulfillment. whether it be active duty or National Guard. Because we're talking about, so often we're talking about young people who are just starting their lives, and they're bringing into the military from their homes and their experiences at school, all of that, all of the, and they have very little context in which to make sense of their own experience because they're young. This is all new. And so to be able to sit down with soldiers who are trying to make sense of their lives and plot a course, make sense of what they're experiencing in their own hearts, and provide some sort of context, maybe some direction, is phenomenally fulfilling. And like I said, there's an endless opportunity to do that kind of work as a chaplain in the military.
Look at that. So then starting to wrap things up a little bit, but what does it mean to you to be able to serve as a chaplain within the military? And you talked about endless fulfillment, mm-hmm. but what makes that fulfilling for you?
I just feel really useful. Like I'm doing something that matters. I don't have to, I don't need every day to be like, I just knocked it out of the park today. I did amazing things. Some days are that very much. Other days, you know, I'm sitting at my computer responding to emails. It's a little less fulfilling, but still necessary. Those opportunities, you know, it's like I was saying before, the idea of like, you never know when I'm gonna need to do the one thing that only I can do, but I know that when that time comes, I'm ready, and that being able to provide that thing is gonna be a source of great satisfaction to me, even as it means that there's somebody who's suffering, but being able to be present for them, I'm grateful that I can do that because somebody does need to be there. And I can do that.
And then, is there any final message or thought you'd really like people out there just to know? Either, you know, about faith, service, the role of the chaplain, what you'd want them to take away if they ever come talk to you, or why they should reach out to yourself or your office?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that I would want everyone to know is that the Chaplain Corps exists to serve you where you are. And whatever we can do to make your life better, to support you and encourage you, to provide resources around spiritual needs, psychological needs, even if it's just a matter of directing you to someone else, we want to do that. You are never a burden. When you come to the Chaplain Corps asking for support, that's what we exist to do. It's where we find our fulfillment and meaning is in being able to serve. So call on us.
Perfect. And if somebody did want to reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to get a hold of your office?
So I carry a duty phone. My cell number is 701-425-4673, 701-425-4673. You can always reach out to me. Text me, call me. Sergeant Vandell is the religious affairs specialist who's in the office all of the time. And so you can reach out to our office too. I can't remember the number off the top of my
head. That's absolutely fine. I'm sure they can reach out to you, or we can get them there. They can send us a note on social media saying, hey, I want to talk to the chaplain.
That would be great.
I get to him. So I appreciate so much, sir, coming on the podcast today. I think that's going to do it for today's episode. We had Major Chad Guion, who is the state support chaplain for the North Dakota National Guard. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.